Notice, visit lightstream.com/DanB for more information.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry, I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Life has changed almost overnight.
Yeah, you have a lot of questions. We are going to try to get you some answers. I'm Mike Simpson.
And I'm Charles Feldman. Together, we host Coronavirus Daily, a podcast designed to help us all get through this crisis together.
We go around the world and talk to some of the top experts out there. So think of this as a guide for you and your family. Multiple ways to listen: radio.com, the radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Remember, that's Coronavirus Daily.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Switch to Sprint and get our best unlimited deal ever. Four lines of unlimited for just $100 a month. If that's not enough, we're throwing in four Samsung Galaxy phones on us. Shop from the comfort of your home at Sprint.com, call 800-SPRINT-1, or come see us in our stores.
Phone after $35.42 per month credit for 18 months credit. Apply within two bills. If canceled early, remaining balance due. Unlimited basic after 7/31/21. Pay $35 per month per line with auto pay. Data deprioritization during congestion. Coverage and offer not available everywhere. Excludes taxes, fees, and roaming. Speed maximums, use rules, $30 activation fee, and restrictions apply.
Doctor's Log, Helldate 2020. Right now, health and medical industries are feeling the pressure of the COVID-19 outbreak. Doctors are feeling that pressure. Nurses are feeling that pressure. I'm definitely feeling that pressure. And so I wanted to capture some of this journey. It's a log of this scary adventure we're all on together. I'm Esther Chu, MD, and this is my Doctor's Log. Go subscribe on radio.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you know there are over 1,000 podcasts on radio.com? Download the app or head to radio.com to listen to all your favorite national and local podcasts, including your favorite morning shows and radio shows on demand. At the top of the app homepage, click the podcast icon to discover new shows, subscribe, and manage your podcast subscriptions. Go to your app store or radio.com/download for all your podcast listening. Radio.com.
The backyard is back. A place to get a breath of fresh air and get together with the family. The Home Depot is here to help you create the backyard you've always wanted. With premium, low-maintenance composite decking and fencing from brands like Trex, Fiberon, TimberTech, and Veranda. And hundreds of other options to bring your backyard back to life this year. Order online and we're on it. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only. Restrictions apply.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Our radio.com sports station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
They're going to
Inverno
Center?
No. Phil, keep it. Don't let Jerry get it.
What?
All right. All you guys who never won before, welcome to being a champion. That's a good start.
That's Michael Jordan. mentioning he didn't want Jerry Krause to get the championship trophy, the Larry O'Brien trophy, was his and Phil's and the selected teammates, and not to be touched by his nemesis, the general manager. An interesting picture, shall we say, is being painted of the former Bulls great, and here to talk about that is Dave Zirin. He is on Twitter at Edge of Sports, the sports editor at The Nation and the Edge of Sports podcast, with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Dave, how are you hanging in there, man?
Hanging in there, doing my thing, just glad everybody's safe and healthy, even if the kids are bouncing off the wall, so not the perfect situation, but I'll take it.
Well, I can imagine the stories that I hear. I mean, this is one of these times I'm lucky to have older kids who want their own space and want nothing to do with us, and they can bounce off the walls as much as they want, I can tell you.
Yeah.
It's interesting to get this outside perspective and your strong thoughts about the Michael Jordan that has sort of been really, really baked into the consciousness here for a long time, where his pathological competitiveness and selfishness has almost been celebrated here. Like, look at the singularity of focus. And you look at it a little bit differently for a couple of reasons. And what were your takeaways looking at this from the outside?
Well, first and foremost, we're talking about a very entertaining documentary. I mean, it would be churlish to say otherwise. And frankly, in this corona time, having something to look forward to on Sundays to watch, debate, is really interesting. The second thing I have to say straight up is that I am from New York City, and those 1990s defeats by the Knicks were just brutal on my young psyche, especially Charles Smith getting blocked again and again, seared into my consciousness. But I don't think that is really shaping my critique of this documentary and my critique of Jordan. The problem with it is that this is not an ESPN documentary. This is a Jordan documentary. ESPN is just the midwife. This is Michael Jordan and the NBA trying to present who they think Michael Jordan is, that they want to promote. So this is Michael Jordan's brand extension for the 21st century. And so what I'm critical of is what it is they're actually promoting and what's being lionized here. And one of the things you referenced with the intro, which is the bullying aspect, like this idea that, you know, going after Jerry Krause for being short, for being fat, all of these things, for getting, you know, teammates to gang up on him. And I know Jerry Krause wasn't blameless in this process. I certainly know that. But the fact that Jerry Krause died in 2017 and isn't there to defend himself just leaves a noxious taste in the mouth. And not to mention all like the alpha male strutting on the team. Like, that worked really well when Michael Jordan was the greatest player in the world. But, you know, I live in D.C., and, you know, I was very much around when he was on the Wizards. And when he went from being Air Jordan to being Floor Jordan, it just didn't wear as well on those two Wizards teams that didn't make the playoffs. I mean, if anything, it broke down and really, really hurt the development of some good young players at that time. So I'm less into the myth of Michael Jordan and more just sort of, I don't know, just shocked that so many people are watching this and thinking like, wow, this is the person who you have to be. This is the kind of person you have to be if you want to be the best.
Especially because of the way we see certain players now carry themselves, where maybe Jordan was fearful of hurting his brand image by speaking out about anything going on in society. The comp that was used in the documentary obviously was Muhammad Ali, of truly having the courage of his convictions, or maybe even having the convictions in the first place is what it comes down to. We see LeBron James just yesterday, LeBron James tweeting his outrage over the murder of Ahmaud Arbery and feeling strongly about how he feels as a Black American and fearlessly doing some of this stuff. He's able to do it, and it's more okay to do it. It's not like he's having any sponsors saying, no, LeBron, don't do that. And what I always get back to, and having lived through the Helms and Gant race, living in North Carolina at the time and being on a college campus that was being pulled in different directions sociopolitically at the time, It's one thing to fault Jordan for not doing something when his mother asked him to do it. It's another thing for wondering, did he really feel strongly about it? Did he avoid acting out of almost these sort of venal financial reasons? Or is he telling the truth when he just kind of didn't think about it that much? All he was thinking about was basketball. And maybe if it's the latter, it doesn't quite feel as bad. It's unfortunate, but it doesn't feel as cynical as him saying, yeah, I sure would do it, even though he says he gave money to Harvey Gantt. But I'm not quite sure where the truth is there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, first, I got to say, someone, I'm trying to remember the journalist so I can give them, oh, it was Jesse Ferguson at the Undefeated, did a deep dive into some of that. And while he found record of Jordan giving money to candidates later in the 90s and to Bill Bradley in 2000, no record of him giving money in 1990 to Harvey Gantt. So that's an interesting wrinkle on this. I think it was certainly an off-the-cuff comment. That's what all the people who were around at the time say. What I also find interesting is, I don't know if you experienced this, but I've gotten a lot of pushback over the last couple of years from people around Jordan who said, well, wait a minute, he never said Republicans buy shoes too. He never said that. Where's your proof? Where's the video? Where's the audio? And there was starting to be, like, I think they realized, like, that this was really a knock against his quote-unquote brand. You know, this was the thing that that made Jordan look like something less than his airness. And so there was a concerted pushback. And I think one of the things about this documentary was Jordan almost playing Colonel Nathan Jessup, you know, saying, you know, you're damn right I ordered the code red. I mean, he said, yeah, I said it. And I think his comments, and I'm going to read the exact quote from Last Dance. He said, the way I go out in my life, I set examples. If it inspires you, great. If it doesn't, then maybe I'm not the person you should be following. See, I think that's a lot of what, like, it's not so much about Nike and being number one and wanting to expand your market share. It's much more of a kind of, I'm Michael Jordan and you're not, and who the hell are you to criticize me? This is who I am. No, I'm not Muhammad Ali, and that's just the way it is, and you can take me or leave me, but I'm not going to be pretend to be somebody I'm not. And he's just not that guy. That's just not who he is. I don't even think it's about his singular approach to basketball. I don't think it's about a cynical calculation about Nike. I think it's much more that he's just not cut from that cloth, and he's not going to pretend to be somebody that he's not. And that's just who he is. And I think what's disappointing about that is, especially in this day and age, we're, you know, I think we're prone to thinking that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And it's difficult to imagine a cultural figure who had more than Michael Jordan in the 1990s in terms of his ability to shape the entire culture. And his way of doing so, which was basically, I'm number one because I can sell as many products as possible and win all the championships. I mean, that is in one sense a reflection of the 1990s. It's not like the 1990s were the 1960s or 70s or anything. It's not like people were clamoring to be part of grand movements to change the world. So he reflected the 1990s, but at the same time, given his power, he also could have played a role in actually shaping the 1990s in a way that Muhammad Ali didn't just reflect the 1960s, but he also played a role in shaping that time as well.
We're talking with Dave Zirin on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. I think what it comes down to then is more about how we react to it then. And you talk, yeah, about having young kids and how we frame it and how we teach it, where it's stopping short of celebrating that kind of monomaniacal focus, because we get to lionizing athletes because nothing stops them from being who they are. And we write this mythology of personality where Jordan's great because it was all about basketball and everything's redeemed by the fact that the ball goes through the hoop and there's the parade and there's the trophy. And it's one thing to say, you know, maybe there could have been more. And I don't know, maybe when Jordan gets to the end of things, people change over time. And when people age and they get a different perspective on maybe just the fleeting nature of human existence, for lack of a better term, and the differences that people can make, I don't know if Jordan is changing or has changed in that regard. But I think it's about whether sort of ask ourselves, when we watch one of these great athletes, what about them are we celebrating? And what meaning do we derive from single-mindedness?
Yeah, and it's tricky. I say with some pride that I have a 12-year-old son who really can hoop, and he plays in a bunch of leagues, and he loves it. And, oh, this corona has been rougher on him than anybody else in the family because he wants to be out there on that court. And we've been watching Last Dance together, and it's been tough. I've had to, like, watch it with him almost surgically. Like, I can't be on my computer or on Twitter while I watch it, because every message that Jordan sends, he's taking in. So I have to be like, yes, that's a good thing, like that he cares about his sport. That's good. Oh, no, he just made fun of the general manager for being overweight. Yeah, that's not something I want you to think is part of what makes Jordan Jordan. And if it is part of what made Jordan Jordan, then maybe that's not the person you should be looking up to. And trying to get him to see it in its totality and be critical of Michael Jordan and not take him in as I think the documentary is presenting him, which is this kind of demigod approach. It was interesting. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday who was very familiar with Michael Jordan, who covered him, had been around him a great deal. And he mentioned that, yeah, that Michael Jordan is not the Michael Jordan who I know, the one we're seeing in The Last Dance. And I said to him, well, that doesn't really matter so much, because that's the Michael Jordan he wants us to know that we're seeing in The Last Dance. And so that's what we have to reckon with.
Well, it's even more, there is a performative aspect to it. And I
exactly.
think that Jordan actually,
yeah.
and he clearly understood that, and that's why he did the PR push out ahead of this, knowing that he was going to have to inoculate against some of it, which at least betrays that there's an awareness. He gets it. He knows what he's watching, and he knows how it might be coming across, and he knows that he's some brand exposure. So maybe that betrays the fact that tells us that he has grown up, he has understood it a little bit, or if I'm being cynical, he understands that the market, the consumer looks at things differently.
True. Or if we want to be very cynical about it, we can understand that, you know, he understands this isn't the 1990s anymore, that we live in an era right now with Twitter, social media, 24-hour sports coverage, that we expect a more rounded 360-degree view of a human being. And it wouldn't have sold if they had just presented us the Space Jam, wanna be like Mike, Michael Jordan. That would not have sold, and that he would have to open up and give some of himself as part of the greater good for his brand to show this is me, Michael Jordan, in the raw. But again, to be cynical, it's the raw that he wants us to see. If it was really Michael Jordan in the raw, I mean, wouldn't we hear something about Juanita Jordan? His wife, wouldn't we hear something about his relationship with his kids? There's nothing in there that speaks to what Michael Jordan was actually like when the cameras were off. It's entirely a camera-on experience. I'm going to date myself terribly, but to me, the closest cousin to this documentary is the old Truth or Dare doc with Madonna from way back when. It's like we're seeing this presentation that's almost meta, because it's like, this is the real me, but this is the real me that I want you to see when on camera.
Fascinating stuff from Dave Zirin, the sports editor of The Nation. And while we're talking about The Nation, I want to put in a plug for something, because I should mention, for a long time, my absolute favorite word puzzle of the week came from The Nation. And it came from two brilliant men named Joshua Cosman and Henry Picciotto. And they have since left this publication. But the good news is they've started a Patreon, and it's called Left Field, Crosswords from Out of Left Field. It's only $3 a month. It's the best $3 you'll ever spend in your life to come. They've got their weekly cryptic crossword. And I am an avid word puzzler. And I don't think there's a single more consistently entertaining great puzzle than these two guys put out. I don't know how well you know them, but it's just, they're amazing at what they do.
Oh, not personally, but their legend is well known and well respected for sure.
And so I urge people to do that. Well, Dave, continued good health to you. I hope your son can get back on the court at some point in the near future. And thanks for taking the time to join us.
No, thank you so much.
That is Dave Zirin of The Nation and the Edge of Sports podcast. A little more basketball talk coming your way, as if you noticed, it looks like the NCAA is getting ready to drop the hammer on for illegal recruitment of players and using boosters to give them money, when out of the other side of their mouth they're saying, oh yeah, we're kind of open to players being paid for their image and their name and their likenesses. So I don't know where any of it's headed. I know that somebody who was out ahead of it for a long time was Jerry Tarkanian, and there is a new book about him that is coming out, written by his son Danny Tarkanian. It's called Rebel with a Cause, and Danny Tarkanian is going to join us, talk a little college basketball next on The Score.
Hello, fitness friend.
Tonight, starting at 6, we replay the final Boers and Bernstein show.
One of the greatest shows of all time.
Who are you crapping?
Recorded Thursday, December 22nd, 2016, from Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village.
Steak dinner, boom.
Steak dinner, boom. And oh, he hung up.
I'll never call again.
Well, and thank you.
I think you're on something.
I think I'm on something. What do I sound like I'm on, Bill?
Who did you say you're directing this to?
Larry. Larry Horse.
The final Boers and Bernstein show, re-aired tonight at 6.
Bill Band.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
This is Damon Amendolara with your Radio.com Sports Minute. The NFL is banking on Tom Brady being interesting and effective. The Bucs got a lot of love from the schedule makers last night, and let's hope that Tom and Tampa pick up their end of the deal. The Bucs are used to float the Monday Nighter in early November against the Giants. If the Bucs aren't good, that could be real ugly. They've got Monday night around Thanksgiving against the Rams. Again, if the Bucks are boring and Tom looks old, that's a lot of bad booger analysis. The Bucks have the Packers and Chiefs as well. Late window nationally televised games on Fox and CBS, which could be awesome as long as the Bucks aren't 7-9 like last year. Here's hoping Tampa Tom isn't terrible Tom for schedule maker's sake. This is Damon Amendolara.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Life has changed, and the news is changing with it. Chicago's most trusted source when it comes to news coverage, WBBM News Radio. For coronavirus updates throughout the day, to learn ways your neighbors are helping, for the latest on healthcare and what's happening in your community, turn to WBBM. Stay safe, stay connected, stay informed. There's only one all-news station in Chicago, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Or ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Israel Idanaje, former Chicago Bear. Coronavirus is very serious and is affecting everyone around us. As a city, we are not playing around. You should neither. Stay home. Save lives.
The Score is helping Chicago stay connected. For more, go to radio.com/stayconnected.
After the Bulls hired new top exec Arturis Karnišovas, The Score jumped into action with our Bulls experts.
Casey Johnson.
Arturis is the guy, and he's got to make a decision on the coaching staff and Jim Boylan's future.
Will Perdue, what are your thoughts?
Bulls fans should be very excited. The biggest thing that everybody talked about was his ability to identify talent.
Joe Cowley.
They grabbed the right guy as far as a guy that understands talent, a guy who's a great communicator.
Ryan McDonough.
Arturis was a big part of helping build the Nuggets into one of the best teams in the NBA, so I think this is a great hire for the Chicago Bulls.
Vincent Goodwill.
The one thing I'll say about Michael Reinsdorf is this: very sensitive to the success of the franchise. I truly believe he wants to win.
He gave Arturis Karnišovas his first shot for the Rockets, Daryl Morey.
There's a lot of excitement today about Arturis.
He's built a team from a non-contender to a contender in Denver, and I think he's got a very good chance to do that for you guys.
When big Chicago sports news breaks, count on us to deliver. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Switch to Sprint and get our best unlimited deal ever. Four lines of unlimited for just $100 a month. If that's not enough, we're throwing in four Samsung Galaxy phones on us. Shop from the comfort of your home at Sprint.com, call 800-SPRINT-1, or come see us in our stores.
Phone after $35.42 per month credit for 18 months credit. Apply within 2 bills. If canceled early, remaining balance due. Unlimited basic after 7/31/21. Pay $35 per month per line with auto pay. Data deprioritization during congestion. Coverage and offer not available everywhere. Excludes taxes, fees, and roaming. Speed maximums, use rules, $30 activation fee, and restrictions apply.
Streaming The Score.
McNeil and Parkins. Afternoons 2 to 6 on The Score.
I go back to the wooden nickel label, damn it. That's how far I go back. Dennis DeYoung is joining us.
Just tell Dan, he knows me. We've worked together. One time we worked together and I said, Dan, don't you owe me money from the 70s still? And he says, no. I said, yeah, I think you're late on the VIG.
I was...
You know what it is? He doesn't even remember the 70s, for God's sake.
Oh, are you kidding me? I was the kid who William Miller and Almost Famous at the Hammond Civic Center after Styx 2. I had the notepad in one pocket and a half pint of Jim Beam in the other, writing for my high school paper about Styx after the Equinox album hit record store shelves. So.
Well, hearing that story, I'd kiss you on the lips, but it'd have to be from 6 feet away.
Listen to McNeil and Parkins on your ride home 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
For the better part of two decades, the early 1970s to the early 1990s, the Runnin' Rebels of UNLV embodied the spirit of the city they represented. Brash, bold, swaggering, and dedicated to the notion that winning and winning big was all that mattered. The Rebels were a dynasty in the desert, one of the longest-running and most successful shows on the Strip. The one act Vegas could call its own. With a charming yet controversial coach and a flamboyant style of play that was a lot wild and a little wicked, the Rebels own Sin City and, against all odds, hit the college basketball jackpot. The run of a lifetime for a small school from the West.
That was the 2011 HBO documentary, The Runnin' Rebels of UNLV. And for those of us who saw him up close and personal, man, it was a thing. And the man behind it, Jerry Tarkanian, may just have actually been able to declare victory had he lived to see the NCAA admit it was time to actually allow some of these players to profit from their names, their images, their likenesses. His son Danny Tarkanian recently published the book Rebel with a Cause, and he joins us in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Danny, how are you hanging in there today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks for being here. You know, I will admit over time that I was wrong about who was the protagonist and who was the antagonist, who was the hero and who was the villain. And it took me a long time and a lot of experience and actually working in basketball and in and around some of these people to start to understand it. But I think it's too bad that your dad wouldn't be able to have seen what happened when the NCAA just the last week actually waved the white flag. Did you feel any sense of vindication?
Well, it's so nice to hear people like yourself make those comments. It's one of the reasons why I wrote this book, is to get people to understand better exactly what was transpiring between my father and the NCAA. But I will say this. There's two things. My dad never thought the players should make a profit off of their name and their ability while they were in college. He felt, though, they should be able to live like any other college student could on campus. And the way the NCAA rules were written, if you come from a poor background, you cannot live like other college kids on campus. In fact, you live almost in poverty at a much lower rate. And my dad just felt that was so unfair. The NCAA scholarship only gives you amount of money to live in the dorms and the cafeteria. There's so much other stuff that kids needed to spend money on that they didn't have access to. And my father was an outspoken critic about that. He broke those rules, and it caused him to fight the NCAA almost his entire career. And and caused him his career to end very prematurely. He was 60 years old when he was forced out at UNLV.
I also recognized over time how the NCAA, even independent of what any coaches did, has just been exposed by information and very solid reporting as essentially a slave labor cartel. And the billions that are made off the NCAA tournament, and with every bit of actual information that comes out, when you actually see the laid bare, the business of the NCAA and what it's founded upon, the fundamental unfairness of it has made me openly root against it. And it makes me, I wish I could go back and understand, because I mean, hey, I was a student at Duke University from 87 to 91. So I bought the Duke versus UNLV scholars versus scumbags t-shirt. I had that t-shirt. I told Greg Anthony these stories. So all I saw was UNLV as this, you know, this villainous outlaw squad, and we were the righteous Duke Blue Devils with all this is the right way to do things. And in the intervening time, the more I've learned about Mike Krzyzewski is how he's gamed the system as much as anybody else. He's learned to profit off the backs of these kids as much as anybody else, and there was somebody in it I should have understood better, and it was your dad.
Yeah, I spent quite a bit of time, or at least a little bit of time in the book, explaining what the NCAA profits from college basketball and how little the players get. And what you mentioned is exactly what is wrong with college sports, what's wrong with the NCAA, and what still has not been changed and needs to be changed. The NCAA makes almost $1 billion a year, most of which is from college basketball and the NCAA tournament. Their executives fly in their own private planes. They stay at six-star hotels. The executive director was making almost $1 million a year during the Great Recession in the 2007-8 years, while everybody else was struggling. And at the same time, they say, hey, any kid who comes to college, they don't have enough money that they can go on a date with someone from the other sex. They don't have any money to go to a party. They can't buy any new clothes. They can't go out and eat outside the cafeteria expenses. It's just a crime what they do to those kids, and that's what my father was fighting against.
I also had the opportunity over time. There's a wonderful book called Sweet Pea and Other Playground Legends that focuses on the case of Lloyd Daniels. And shortly after I graduated college and I went to work in minor league pro basketball, the Global Basketball Association, and I spent a lot of time with Lloyd. And even when he was in the CBA with the Fort Wayne Fury over time. And I thought he was a fascinating, fascinating guy, is. And when he told me about Mark Warkentin and about what was done for him and just described his youth growing up and showed me the scars and the bullet holes and the places where there's still bullets lodged in his body and how he grew up and what your dad did to just give him a shot, even later, even after all was said and done, to bring him to the Spurs and never forgetting the dedication. I still think, and I tell people this, he is one of the greatest basketball talents I've ever seen. And I saw him still when he had enough ability. And I'm just wondering that had there been some sort of fairer system in place, how Lloyd Daniels would have been remembered as a basketball player with just a unique set of skills.
Yeah, I tell you, I really enjoyed this interview because you're well-versed on this better than anybody I've spoken with. Lloyd Daniels is considered by many to be the greatest high school player of all time. My father brought him in at UNLV, and it basically ended his career at UNLV because his investigation started the last NCAA investigation. I mean, his recruitment started the last NCAA investigation. Lloyd screwed up himself by getting arrested trying to buy some drugs and was kicked out of the school. But my dad never gave up on Lloyd. As you mentioned, first of all, he stayed in touch with him even while my dad was still coaching at UNLV, and Lloyd was trying to make in the CBA. And when my dad got the job in the NBA, one of the first players he brought in was Lloyd Daniels, and he gave him a chance. Then after my father left the NBA, Lloyd never made it any further. Lloyd would call my dad on a regular basis, ask for help, whether financial or advice, and my dad would help him. My dad and Lloyd were very close to the end. Lloyd has a AAU team called the Rebels that he coaches out of New Jersey. And my dad kept a relationship with Lloyd, even though Lloyd was basically the catalyst of him losing his job at UNLV. I think that says a ton about my father. I'm glad you brought up Mark Warkentin. Him and his wife, Maureen, Mark lost his job because of Lloyd Daniels. But all he did was Lloyd didn't have any parents' supervision. His grandmother was the only person around. And so Lloyd had a lot of difficulties academically. Mark and Maureen filed papers to get it, become the guardian. And all they did was help him get a tutor and try to learn so that he could be able to go through college and have that experience. They were great what they did for Lloyd. I'm glad you brought them up.
Before we let you go, Danny, what is something else from the book that you think is important that that people take away? And looking at it, especially with a modern context, and as we better understand the rights of the college athlete and what college sports are supposed to be about, what was the essence of his cause beyond just allowing them to live like normal college students? Was there something larger socially about the opportunities of kids from certain backgrounds, or it just seemed like he was motivated by trying to balance the scales a little bit?
What a great question. Again, my father grew up a lot like the kids that are dominating college sports now. He was discriminated when he was growing up because of his Armenian heritage. He was very poor. He's a bad student. He got in trouble off the court. So he related with these players. My dad, when we were coaching at Fresno, Matt Doherty told me, "Don't take this the wrong way, Danny." Matt was an assistant at Kansas at the time. He said, "We just don't recruit the same players your dad does. We just can't coach them." And I think that's what my dad was so special at. He took players that nobody else would touch. He brought them together, gave them an opportunity to succeed, and bowled them into a fine-tuned team that played harder than any in the country, were the best in the country. I got one quick story, if I have time, I think it's really important to explain how my dad was. He recruited a kid named John Trapp when he was at Riverside City College, and everybody told him, "Don't take John Trapp. He's gotten kicked out of numerous schools. He's had trouble with the law." So my dad didn't listen to him. He wanted to give this guy another chance. So John comes and meets with my dad for the first time in Riverside, and John didn't trust any white person before. And he says, "My father told him, 'John, if you keep your nose clean, you got a chance to have a great career professionally in basketball. But if you get in trouble again, you're going to be out on the streets and you won't have another opportunity.'" And he goes, "By the way, I'm taking my wife Lois out to dinner. You watch my four young children, the oldest being 7. John said he's never had a white person trust him before. And can you imagine this coach who just met him says, "Babysit my four young children, the oldest being 7 years old. And from that point on, John and his family are one of the closest families in our family's history.
That's a sensational story, and it says a lot about your dad's character. And I think it in time, a lot of us, believe me, if somebody like me can come around from being on one side of this whole thing of Tarkanian versus NCAA and have swung completely, absolutely in the opposite direction just by knowing what we know, it sounds like a wonderful read. The book is called Rebel with a Cause, and the author, Danny Tarkanian, has been our guest on The Score. Really appreciate your time, Danny. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed being on. Have a good day.
You too. That is Danny Tarkanian. And coming up next, how about we have a conversation with Terry Bores? Because tonight's going to be the re-airing of the last Bores and Bernstein show, and it feels like a long time ago. But Terry's got strong thoughts. I don't know if he's heard the Gorillaz yet, but he's got strong thoughts about what's going on with The Last Dance and something that he thinks hasn't been addressed that maybe should be. So wellness check for Uncle Terry. That's coming next on The Score.
The dramatic story of the 90s Bulls has been the hot topic in sports nationally, thanks to ESPN's eye-opening documentary.
Paxton for three!
So every Monday morning, 9 to noon, we're bringing in three-time Bulls champion Will Perdue to hang out with Dan Bernstein, recapping this historic time.
Things got real.
These were the episodes that kind of did the deep dive as far as what everybody wants to know about the Bulls, but also about Michael Jordan. Michael controls the content. He had to have the last say, and he allowed a lot of this to be out there.
From behind the scenes, in the locker room, at the practices, and in the heat of the championship run, Will Perdue talks Michael Jordan, Phil Jackson, and the rest of the 90s Bulls with Dan Bernstein every Monday 9 to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Bulls.
If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your existing home, you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local mortgage professionals. Today, meet Jen, a nurse who spent 14 days in isolation 2 separate times after contracting COVID-19 before going back on the line to help patients fight the virus. While in isolation the first time, Jen called Team Hochberg for a free consultation about using her home's equity to pay off her private student loans. Team Hochberg mortgage professional Sarah Ruffer helped Jen do a cash-out refinance, pay off over $100,000 of private student loans, and reduced her payments over $1,000 a month. So let's review. Before calling Team Hochberg, Jen owed over $100,000 in private student loans. After calling Team Hochberg, Jen paid off her private student loans and saved over $12,000 a year. If you're stressing over your finances, please call 312-855-56-DAVID or visit 56david.com for a free consultation. Team Hochberg has helped thousands of SCORE listeners, but they can't help if you don't call 855-56-DAVID or visit 56david.com. Homeside Financial, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 1124061.
The backyard is back. A place to get a breath of fresh air and get together with the family. The Home Depot is here to help you create the backyard you've always wanted. With premium, low-maintenance composite decking and fencing from brands like Trex, Fiberon, TimberTech, and Veranda. And hundreds of other options to bring your backyard back to life this year. Order online and we're on it. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. U.S. only. Restrictions apply.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The SCORE thanks all the essential workers, medical professionals, and first responders during these unprecedented times.
It's David Haw. Thank you.
Pat Hughes here. I just want to say thank you.
Chuck Swirsky here. A big thank you.
Lawrence Holmes here. Thanks to all of you.
Ron Coomer here. Thanks.
Dan Bernstein here. Thanks for all you do.
We appreciate all you do. Thank you from all of us at 670 The SCORE. The SCORE is helping Chicago stay connected. For more, go to radio.com/stayconnected.
Boy, things have gotten really weird.
Yeah, it almost seems like every day you don't know what to expect. So we are going to try and help get you through it.
I'm Charles Feldman.
And I'm Mike Simpson, and we're the hosts of the new podcast, Coronavirus Daily. We bring in some of the top experts all around the world to ask the questions that you have.
Because we are all in this together, and you know what? We are all going to survive this together.
Again, Coronavirus Daily on the radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Let's grab a call. Let's go to Bettendorf, Iowa, and welcome Stuart to The Score. Hello, Stuart.
Hello. I want to say I think this Ryan Pace is just full of hot air. He talked like he's going to bring personnel into the competition into the personnel room. The last 2 years he didn't bother bringing competition in for Mitch, so why is he talking that now? So he's gonna
because he did
get a quarterback every draft. He didn't. The guy is full of hot air.
Yeah, well, we don't know. I mean, we thought it might have been the Clay people calling earlier today. This segment is brought to you by Grand Appliance and TV. Grand Appliance has served Chicagoland since 1930 and remains committed to safely delivering and installing your essential appliances during these unprecedented times. Shop in-store, over the phone, or at grandappliance.com and get an additional 5% rebate on most appliance purchases. Tonight on these airwaves, you will hear a replay of the last Boers and Bernstein show. And Terry Boers, he was the Boers in that. He is on Twitter, at RealTerryBoers, and he's on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How you hanging in there, old fella?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
Good. Yeah, okay.
I'm the same caller, so I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm
lunkheads.
I'm glad somebody called from 2003. I really appreciate that.
The guy is full of hot air. I want to say I think this Ryan Pace is just full of hot air.
Yeah, I don't. We had no idea what the hell was happening, but hey, it's all good. So you're good. Family's good for the most part. Everything's all right.
Yeah, everything's all right. Just hunkered down, hiding from the world. I mean, I get out, see the doctor here and there, and that's the doctors here and there, and that's about it. Not much excitement, but I am angry about something. I want to get to this before we talk about the show, which you'll probably remember better than I do, because my long-term memory is better than my short-term memory. I know it was at Real Time Sports, and it was terrific. I can yeah, it's just throwing terrific in.
No, it was a blur. Honestly, the whole thing was a blur to me because there were so many mixed emotions for the last show. You know, you're trying to be in the moment and understanding it was the 17 years and all of that. But also because of your health, there was that concern that kind of hangs over the whole thing that you're like, all right, you know, you want to make sure that this guy's all right. And, you know, before you were completely out of the woods with some of that stuff, that was it made a lot of it a little heavy in a different way for me.
Yeah, I was in the hospital most of that time. I mean, I was about a month out from my second surgery, which is 10 hours. So, yeah, it was difficult. I think that probably the drugs and everything I had probably kind of eliminated from my memory. I remember Real Time Sports, one of our favorite places. We only spent about 100 days there, right? I mean, between everything we did over the years. But, I don't have any really hitch-in-the-head memories and you go, oh, yeah, I remember that. Because I was... Well, I guess the term would be heavily medicated. I mean, I was pretty much still under, and if you recall, I missed basically 6 months of work. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like I had a cold, so it just was very difficult. And I don't even know if it was good or bad. I assume it was okay. I remember the my last show better. I was a little more cogent about 10, 12 days later, whatever it was, a little more cogent. Of course, I was never all that cogent to start with, so it didn't. Nobody probably knew the difference, but... Geez, if your memory's going, then how am I? Then you're talking to the wrong guy. I can't help you there.
So you've been watching The Last Dance like the rest of us. We've all been setting aside these Sunday nights. And so many, like, I keep seeing my hand. I keep seeing my hand in there, or I see the back of my head, and then I see myself running away to go run after Dennis Rodman or go run after somebody else. But just so much comes flooding back as you watch some of these things. But I don't know if the story is being entirely told here, because there are some huge chunks that might end up missing.
I think here's my biggest chunk, and it was driven home to me when I saw Michael. What he did during one of the telecasts, when he repeatedly, you know what he called Isaiah Thomas over and over and over and over again, right? Well, look, when they played the Pistons, Isaiah was a pest, but he wasn't the one beating the crap out of Jordan. That was Lane Beer and Mahorn, who just absolutely knocked him out. I mean, they didn't play a game where Bill Lane Beer didn't knock him out of the air. I mean, which is very dangerous. And he did it from the time Jordan was a rookie to all the way through. He just couldn't. So I'm thinking, why is Jordan so mad? Why is he so mad? I mean, he's still mad at Isaiah. And I'm thinking, well, I know why. And there's an old saying in journalism, if you don't know a story, you just say it's false. And if you say it's false long enough, you'll start to believe it. You'll get somebody to back you up and say, yeah, that never happened. Well, it did happen. And the whole thing with Magic and Isaiah. So you can imagine going back to his first All-Star game when he was the hottest commodity in the NBA and the jealousy was running high with a lot of people around. I mean, I covered the team. It just incredible. But what some people said to him, well, this is off the record, but I'm going to, you know, this, I'm going to tell you this about him and all this other stuff. And I'm going to, okay, well, what's on your mind? Tell me. But Isaiah and Magic, we both know we're at the 85 All-Star game. So I was on the elevator. We always stayed at the Hyatt in Indy when we were down there, when they paid the Pacers, whenever it was at NCAA, whatever, I stayed there. So I was on the 18th floor. So I get on the elevator, and I go to the back of the elevator. This is the day before the game. And it crowds up pretty quickly. And I notice these two guys standing in front of me. They had moved back to African-American guys. And I knew them. I kind of knew them. Because they were Magic's guys. I mean, I'd seen them at all the NBA finals and so forth, and they were always around them. It was like bodyguards, the kind of guys they have around them, NBA guys and other guys. So they're standing right in front of me. They didn't turn around. I didn't know them. They didn't know me. So the one guy says to the other guy, well, are they going to get him or not? And he goes, yeah, it's all set. They're going to get him. And I'm thinking, what the hell are you talking about? What are you talking about? And then they started laughing and cackling and talking about something else. And as we're getting off, every floor stopped, and five more people got on, so we're crammed into one another. And he finally says to him, well, this will be the night you find out something about Michael Jordan. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? So I got off the elevator, got to the arena, called my buddy Tommy Bonk, who was at that point covering the Lakers for the L.A. Times. And before that, by the way, he coined one of the greatest nicknames in history called Houston Five Slam Pajama, that Tommy Bonk, that guy.
Yeah.
So I called him. I said, Tommy, I need your help with something. I said, I heard Magic's guys on the elevator, and there's something going on here. I'm not sure what's going on, but you look into it from your end, and because I don't mind, I'll share. We'll because we're buddies, and we'll share it. Okay, I'll take a look. Well, I finally got off press row. I went back to my room, and the light was on, so I called him. And sure enough, that's what he found out, that Isaiah had cooked up this scheme to embarrass Michael. And Magic went along with them because they had the same agent, George Andrews, and from Chicago. The same guy. They're all in the same tide, even though they weren't necessarily the greatest friends who ever lived. But they had the Big Ten connection, and they knew each other, the same agent, the whole thing. So there's a lot of reasons for them to be mad at. But there's an old saying in journalism, if you don't write it, then you just say it never happened. Well, that's what people have done since then. He got 9 shots that game. There's clearly something. You had to be absolutely blind or something's wrong with you not to see what was going on. They were freezing Jordan out. They didn't lie. I mean, he shows up to warm-ups in different clothes than you were supposed to wear, and he had a lot of gold. And it just all the stuff that irritated Isaiah. I think the whole Chicago thing irritated him because he knew that someday Jordan was going to be an even bigger star than Isaiah Thomas was. So, I mean, this absolutely happened. They had concocted this thing. But you know, with basketball, you can't necessarily do it to a T. You can't necessarily nail it the way you want to nail it. So I'm watching the game, and I'm watching specifically for that. And the other part of it was that they were going to have Magic Johnson make sure that Jordan had a guard, George Gervin, who was a little bit bigger when he was on the floor. They made sure that his job on the West team was to make sure George Gervin was on the floor when Michael was on the floor, at least most of the time. Okay, so well, he did all that. All that nonsense happened. And since then, it's become this thing of denial. And I think I'm watching this. So when you win your first title, you finally beat Isaiah, right? You beat him in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's one gone. And then you get to the NBA Finals, and who's waiting for you but Magic? Mm-hmm. And believe me, Michael Jordan doesn't – he knows everything that ever happened, like an encyclopedia, he knows. So when I'm watching him say this, I'm thinking, you can't possibly all the stuff that he did with the Pistons. Yeah, but there's a lot of other Pistons involved. There's so many involved with nasty play and just being nasty people. That wasn't it. That was fire. That's exactly what that was. That's his way of saying I got them both. I got him both, and I remember him after the game, too. I know that's exactly what he was doing. So anybody can say, well, it didn't happen. It happened.
Yeah, there were a couple. The other aspect, too, where they also they talked their way around like the circumstantial evidence of Isaiah not being on the Dream Team. And I keep thinking, right. Come on. Like, that was one of those things. There didn't have to be some sort of meeting where Michael Jordan exactly pounded right on a desk and said, I'm not playing. Everybody knew. Like, there was, whether it's a nod or a wink or an understanding, the whole idea that, because remember, Jordan wasn't going to play anyway because he'd already gotten a gold medal. Back in 84, right. He was on that team, mm-hmm. and this whole idea was, and the idea that somehow they wanted the pros in there, it was actually the FIFA president that made that paved the way for pros to participate. And as they're putting the team together, they weren't sure Jordan was going to participate at all. But one thing they understood was they were going to keep the door open for his participation because he didn't agree mm-hmm. until later. And you think that they're going to put Isaiah on a team where they were holding out hope that Jordan might join? He didn't have to come in there and say, if Isaiah plays, I'm not playing. It wasn't like that. It was just so well known and so clear that they had to make it inviting for him to play that the last thing they could have done was included Isaiah at that point.
That was my second example. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they did. So you've got two things staring you in the face, and you're still, there's still people saying, that, well, that never happened. Yeah, I heard about it. That just, that's crap. That happened. I'm telling you, that's Isaiah concocted it. Magic did his little part of it. Jordan didn't have quite as hard of feelings for it as he did Isaiah because of all the Pistons and all the stuff built up over the years. But that's exactly what he did. And to this day, that fire in his eyes, what he was saying that about Isaiah, that's got nothing to do with what the Pistons did. Isaiah wasn't knocking him around or beating him up. He wasn't knocking him out of the air. He wasn't, you know what I mean? He wasn't, none of that stuff was him. But he knows when somebody, and I'm damn positive. I wasn't around them, but I'm damn positive that you're absolutely right. That's the second thing. That's the second nail in the coffin is that Jordan said, if he's playing, I'm not. I guarantee you, I would almost guarantee you he did that. And I know what he was still mad about. It's got nothing to do with the Pistons anymore. That's not, we beat him and fine. And when I used to talk to him about it, when they first started doing it, when I was writing the column, that he never mentioned Isaiah as one of the guys. I mean, he didn't like him, but he didn't have that loathing for him like he did for Laimbeer and Mahorn, and even Rodman to an extent. I mean, but Rodman mostly liked to push Scottie Pippen around. He loved to do that.
And it's funny when you bring up Pippen, too, because the other thing that stands out is the fact that they played the Lakers in the finals, and he had this enmity for Magic, yet Jordan deferred defensively in that series. It was Pippen that was guarding Magic. And it was Pippen, and they used a really aggressive tactic throughout the series because Worthy was hurting, if I remember. Worthy was not at full speed. And Magic had to do more than he usually would. And Pippen just mugged him, like up and down, physically just picked him up 94 feet. Every time Magic turned, Pippen would bump him, and just wear him down like a heavyweight fight. And the respect that Jordan had to have to defer to Pippen, when you know Jordan wanted that. You know Jordan wanted that assignment, but it allowed Jordan to rest a little bit more. It allowed Jordan to save himself on the defensive end while Pippen was just eating Magic alive.
Yeah. Well, this whole thing is just—it's just silly that now all of a sudden I was looking up some stuff and I see all this. Well, that never happened. Yeah, you just believe what you want. Go ahead and come on, do a little work. Think about what you're saying, and then just look at this thing again. What you're talking about, what I'm talking. Just take a look at it again. You think all that animus is built over the fact that they just didn't get along because Isaiah wasn't beating him up physically. He wasn't doing anything to him. He didn't bother him
Isaiah,
at all.
Isaiah was dirty, though. He would grab in a way that was considered – it was just – times were different, and the level of what was considered dirty and what was considered gamesmanship. I mean, Isaiah would grab you. He would stick his foot out sort of in the same way John Stockton was.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and we'll, I hope they get to this, too, because there were few players that were considered dirtier than John Stockton.
Correct. Another little dirty bastard. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm just looking at the thing and why do you think that after all this time, 30 years later, he's still sizzling? Why do you think that? Because Isaiah grabbed him or tried to trip? You think that's why he's mad?
Right.
You think that's why he holds that to him? Because he didn't shake his hand? I mean, I guarantee you, if you said, okay, here's what you can do. You take a shot at it. Isaiah would have been in the top two or three, but he wouldn't have been the first one that Jordan would have cut down if he had a chance. Mm-hmm. I mean, Laimbeer just absolutely and equivocally never stopped hitting him as hard as he could in the air. And he did it every damn game. So, I mean, to say, he didn't. You'll notice he never went after him, never said a thing about Laimbeer.
Nope.
I mean, it really didn't. And Horn was another one who would cheap shot you and do all that other stuff. But I'm telling you, that the depth of his anger, because Michael never forgets a thing. You have to remember this. And people who know, he never forgets a damn thing. He knows what they did. He's not stupid. That word was around the locker room, too. This is like, where'd this nonsense come from? No, there was Tommy had it. I had it. Charlie Vincent from Detroit caught on to it, too, because of Isaiah. So he caught on to it, my old buddy. So, I mean, come on. This categorically denied. Well, this never happened. That's not worth mentioning. That never happened. It is worth mentioning. Where do you think this started?
Awesome stuff, Jerry.
The genesis of this was that.
Appreciate it, and hope stay in good health. Have a great weekend, and I'll look forward to listening back to the show tonight. We could both remember it together.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm sorry. I remember real-time sports, and I remember you were there.
Well, that's all that mattered. All right, be well, my friend.
All right, you be well, too, everybody. Take care.
That's Terry Bors. Thanks to our guests, Terry and Hub Arkish and Dave Zirin and Danny Tarkanian. Oh, do we have a show on Monday? We just got confirmed that the director of The Last Dance and ESPN, Jason Hayer, is going to join Will Perdue and me at 9 o'clock. Mark Schanowski, Bill Cartwright, Lou Kanellis, Will Perdue is sitting in on our Bulls Monday on Monday. It is going to be absolute can't miss. Thanks to Jay Zawoski. Thanks to Ray Diaz. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Wash your hands. Wear your mask. Be socially distant as you can. Listen to doctors and only listen to people who listen to doctors. Joe Ostrowski is in for Lawrence Holmes. He is next. We'll be back with a jam-packed show to react to The Last Dance on Monday. Have a great weekend.
I want to say I think this Ryan Pace is just full of hot air.
This is 670 The Score, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station, period. Thanks for keeping us on top, Chicago.
This Saturday, UFC 249 is poised to be action-packed. The fighters are eager to step into the octagon. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting you in the center of the octagon with a special sign-up to offer $1,000 as your sign-up.